Yo, be a father. If not, why bother, son? A boy can make him, but a man can raise one. Be a father to your child. Be a father to your child.
Welcome back.
Let me know if you hear all kinds of crazy noises, because I have my window open. We actually have some nice weather in Miami today.
Sound like my spot with the planes flying by.
Yeah. Well, I do have an airport close by.
Oh, okay.
For my sake, can we not talk about weather? Especially, both of you motherfuckers.
Let's like 65 degrees. Something like that.
We're just gonna keep talking.
Nice. See, I got a hoodie on, which we never get to rock in Miami.
Thanks, guys.
It's nice.
Yeah, it's real nice. So how we doing, y'all?
We're doing good, man.
Well, I have a breakthrough in my fatherhood story. So we finally took everything out of the room that is supposed to be for the baby. That was my DJ/ studio room. Got everything out of there because I got a space down the street. And yeah, last night was the second night that she slept in that room. And, and we moved everything out of our room, mostly everything, into her room. And I'll tell you right now, it's amazing. Amazing.
Did she sleep?
Whole night?
She slept through?
Yeah, I mean, look, props to my girl, because she's really the one that takes on the night duty
for Sledge,
So she still, if she hears something, she'll get up. We still have the monitor, and she'll get up. She's like a firefighter. She hears anything, she jumps up, runs to the room. But yeah, she sleeps pretty. She sleeps a good solid, maybe 4 or 5 hours. Solid. Then might get up because, maybe you need to change a diaper, and then, something like that.
She didn't seem to have a problem though, being in the room by herself or any of that kind of stuff.
I thought she might, but nah. We had my father and his wife, they gifted us a crib,
right?
That I built over the weekend. Me and my girl built it, and it's a big wooden crib. And then we put she's been sleeping in the bassinet, but one of those like pillows that kind of comfort her.
Yeah.
And we just ordered one that's larger because she already outgrew it. But we put that pillow in the crib, so she still felt the same, at least snug the same way. And it wasn't completely foreign where she's like in this big old like bed, because it's still pretty big. But nah, she slept through.
What's your process? So do you just, I'm assuming you carry her for a little while, put her to sleep on one of you, and then you place her wherever she's going to lay the rest of the time? Or do you just throw her in the bed? And
No. I wish. It's very rare that she falls asleep on her own.
Right.
But usually the night, the way it goes down at night is that my girl usually will feed her and then put her to sleep. And that's usually her, like around 9, 10 the latest. 9 is usually the time. From that point on, she's like sleeping, the long stretch that she does. And then she'll wake up like one time, maybe. I mean, my girl could probably speak better this, because I'm not the one that wakes up, but she'll maybe wake up like around, 3 or 4 in the morning, somewhere around there, maybe 3 in the morning. And then she'll wake up again for like a feeding around 5 or 6.
And then, that's not bad.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then my girl says that I'm the one that has the magic touch in terms of putting her to sleep
quickly,
because, a little quicker than my girl. I mean, my girl has the magic touch with the
breastfeed. That Bacardi you put in the bottle, man.
Nah. I just be the way I hold her. I don't know if it's hormonal, where the baby senses the breast and wants to like automatically feed, and that's what she looks for in terms of my girl. Mm-hmm. And then with me, she knows she doesn't have that. So it's like I just hold her tight, and it's different arms, obviously. And then I just have my little thing that I pat her, and then I sometimes even sing to her. And like, it's funny because I'll start like singing or humming, and she like just looks up and like gives me like a little grin, like, okay.
Like, daddy, stop that shit? Or like, oh, I'm fucking
No. And then like puts her in a trance,
So what kind of song? So why don't you serenade us?
I freestyle, dude.
All right, let's hear it.
No, I ain't fucking singing for you.
Let me find out you were a vocalist, E.
Yeah. sometimes I get my auto tunes out. Nah. Basically, what I do is I adapt rhythms of like mostly 80s pop hits and just throw my daughter's name in there and add daddy and mommy and love you. But it's the rhythm is some 80s pop hit. Or it's like a Christmas carol or, you know, like stupid songs. Like
as long as it works.
It's dope.
Like party all the time. I do all the time. Like, Emmy all the time. Emmy.
Actually, that was a party all the time was mine. Was one of mine too. That, but it was potty all the time. So when we were doing the potty training, it was.
That's awesome.
Yes. And then he started singing that too.
My joint, actually, now we're talking about it. My joint continues to be "Good Night, Sweetheart." That's, I don't remember who sings it, but it's like. Good night, sweetheart.
Yeah.
Oh, the 50s.
Like the doo-wop song.
Yeah. Doo-wop joint. And my kids love it. But I don't remix nothing. I just sing the hook over and over and over.
I completely. And sometimes I don't know what to say. So it's like, if any normal person is listening, they're like, this makes no sense what you're saying. You know, like, but I mean, it's funny, man. My girl sometimes records it because it's a trip.
Man, we should put one at the end of the podcast, man. Come on.
Yeah, what's up?
She catches me. I mean, well, I'll see what she's caught so far.
So I was trying to figure out. Well, first of all, a quick update. You know how I'm having the pee-pee issues with the diapers overloading, right?
I thought you were having a pee-pee issue.
Yeah, no, I am.
I'm like, bro, get that checked out. Are you burning? I'm burning.
So I had to buy a fresh new pair of underwear because it wasn't working out. No. So we were using Huggies, and I had spoken to one of my old coworkers, and she was like, and I think we might have talked about this, getting a size bigger helped her, is what she told me, with her kid. So we tried that for a while, still kind of the same as far as, you know, overflow. Then we switched to the Costco brand, the Kirkland brand, recently, and like, I don't know, in a week where we might have got two dry days when she woke up, we now get about five. So I believe the Kirkland brand, for whatever reason, and it's her normal size.
These are underwears?
No,
like pull-ups?
These are pull-ups. Well, no, pull-ups, they're actually regular diapers, not pull-ups.
Okay.
Shout out to Kirkland.
Word. Shout out to Kirkland.
Kirkland's all right, man. Kirkland got it going on.
Yo, everything I buy that's Kirkland tends to work out really well. So
yo, Kirkland, man, we you know, you can sponsor us, kid.
Yeah, we'll come out to Washington State and everything.
Costco, like, what up?
Do a Costco podcast. What's up?
Yeah.
We'll do a podcast live in the
live, yo, that'd live be, at Costco.
Yo, that might be ill, like next to all like the baby stuff. Real quick, based on what you're saying, my girl, she got onto this whole thing with getting, I didn't even know that they had these diapers, but nighttime diapers. Mm. So she says she's noticed that our daughter won't wake up. I don't want to say as frequently, but won't wake up as quickly.
Soaks it all up.
Yeah. And so she'll sleep for a longer stretch wearing those diapers. So my girl actually went out, I think, yesterday and bought those diapers specifically.
Mm. I think we tried them once upon a time. I can't remember exactly, but it didn't really pan out for us. Like I said, I honestly think my daughter is just like a phenom. She's an Olympic peer. Like, that's the only thing I can really chalk it up to, because not a lot of parents really like agree or necessarily share the same experience that I'm.
What are you? Are you making her drink 2 gallons of water a day or something?
You know what I think it is. So my daughter's, she's gonna be 3 in a couple months.
She's still breastfeeding, right?
No.
Oh no.
No, but she still.
Oh, you know, there's people that they'll go on to like teens.
Until 7, 8 years old, kid. Right. Hey, bro, you know, whatever. Right. So she drinks, we still give her milk, right? And she's drinking that right before she goes to sleep every single time.
Oh, there it is.
So that's what we're thinking. So we're trying to eliminate that from the routine in order to, you know, try to get through the night without that problem. But it's got to be that. At this stage of the game, that's the only thing we can think of.
And do you have the issue of when you're changing her diaper, she pees also? Like, once the diaper's off?
Nah. I mean, really early.
Like, my daughter does that from time to time.
Like, around, you know, the first 6 months or so, we would see that happen every so often. But But the funnest one, and this is something that my mother would share with me, like when I was a little kid, you know, boys, because we have penises, like, it just, I don't know, it's more direct when we pee versus the girl. Like, the girl's like a little spout type of thing, and then the kid get long range action. So I would wet everybody, and then my son, when he would go at it, like, it was like, oh shit, you know, a fire hose.
I think we just lost our Kirkland sponsorship.
No, that was record time.
I'm assuming you guys did you get the book now that I actually remember the name of it and the author and the title?
No.
Or did you forward to your significant other?
The potty training one?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I forwarded it to Karina. Somebody, who was I talking to? Oh, Paul, a.k.a. Weird Thoughts, a.k.a. Drink Champ Sports. He says he has a gripe to pick with you about that book.
Oh, for real?
Like, get the fuck out of here with that shit. he's like, I'm gonna be polite, but I'm about to say, get the fuck out of here with that book. That shit is bullshit. He doesn't believe it.
He could have saved himself a lot of money, man. Five kids.
Yo, come on now. Real kid.
Yeah,
tell Paul we'll have that combo shortly.
Yeah, I told him we're gonna have him. We should have him maybe next week if we want. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm down.
I told him he'd be a family guest from the beginning.
he's coming with some fire. He and I spoke real quick. And he was like, "Yo, I'm not holding back. I'm gonna keep it 100. I don't care."
Yeah, he's got a lot. Like right now, he's going through it with the youngest of the first three daughters. Mm. He has another daughter and a son from his other girl. But the youngest of the three has a boyfriend, and I don't think told him. Like, just got, like, a boyfriend. She's, like, I think she's 15, 16. Yeah. So he was telling me that there's been some tension there. And then the other daughters chimed in because he was mean to her about it, because he was upset that she didn't divulge the information that she had a boyfriend. He had to find out or found out later. And so the other ones are like, you got mad at us, too, blah, blah, blah. And, like, he's just going through it with that. So he could bring that to the table. Having teenage daughter. Well, I mean, the oldest have boyfriend stuff yet or not yet?
Who are you talking to?
You, Manny.
Fucking crazy.
Who else am I talking to?
It's coming. It's coming, man.
She's 11, right?
She's 11. Yeah, she's 11.
Yeah.
Chill, son. Don't be wishing that on me right now.
I mean, has she expressed any interest in boys at all?
Nah. She just plays ball with them and boops their ass. Like, that's the only... She's kind of tomboyish in that regard. Like, she finds girls to be kind of boring because, like, they just sit in a cut. And, like, for instance, they'll go to a party. And then even at this age, they'll just sit in the corner looking at their cell phones and, like, chit-chat and, you know, gossip or whatever. And she's like, yo, we're here to party, right? Let's go dance. And then she'd be the only girl, like, really on the dance floor. And then everybody else is just, like, standing around.
Mm.
So she's kind of... That's her only, not dancing, but just like playing sports in particular. That's right. Her, like, where she interacts with guys.
Yeah.
In any other, you know, not relationship. Well, God, I can't even talk about it.
That's crazy, man. Having a daughter. I mean, I don't know. What do you, like, Kay, having a son, what do you think it's the same worry of him growing up and then having relationships? Obviously, I don't think it is for guys, to be quite honest.
No, I don't think it's
a girl. You're more, because we're guys, and we know as guys how we thought and acted. So we're like, ah, fuck, you know, they're going to encounter people who are like us back in the days, you know?
Yeah, no, I don't think it's the same at all. I think when I'm thinking about having these conversations with him later on, it's more like guiding him to you know, spend time with someone who's actually going to be nice to you, as opposed to wasting your time with
no gold diggers,
folks that, you know, girls that are going to be a pain in the ass, or he has to, you know, they're going to be super moody and all that kind of stuff. You know, just like the stuff you go through when you're kind of trials and tribulations of
no kikis
moving around that way. So I don't know. I think with a girl, it's a totally, totally different scenario. Although, I find it weird, like my son's in kindergarten and there's already a bunch of girls always talking, you know, coming over and hugging him and saying they want to marry him and trying to hold his hand. And this is kindergarten. I see some of the dads, like when we're doing drop off or like, lining up. Damn. Yeah, dads are pissed off. They're looking around. Like,
that happens with my godson too. Like Choco, which you've met.
Yeah.
He's same thing. He has like little girls that are like, oh, this is my future husband or this is my boyfriend or stuff like that. And you know, it sounds cute now, but
right.
Yeah. When when you talk about like, you know, is it the same, you know, how you feel about your son versus your daughter when it comes to relationships? Same thing's happening to my son in kindergarten, Kay. Like his name comes out of the mouths of all the girls in the classroom and also all the boys. Like everyone in the classroom mentions him when they go back home. Like we were just at his school this week they had this thing where the kids wrote like a story about a place they've been to, and then they made it into a little book, 3-page book. And they, you know, parents would come, the kids would read the book to you, and then they would autograph it for you. And it was kind of like a little, you know, book signing kind of session. So in that moment, like 5 different parents came to us. Oh, are you his son, his dad? I'm like, yeah. Oh my God, my son's always talking. Oh, my daughter. And my wife was getting tight. She, every time the parent of a girl came up to her, she was like, for real? Like, are you serious? And they, like 2 days before, she was at a party, like my son's first birthday party from class. And at that place too, mad girls, because it was a girl's birthday party. So mad other girls, their parents were coming to her and saying the same thing. So she was tight. So, and I'm like, yo, what's the big deal? She's like, that's my son. You can't take him away. Like, she felt like they were like taking him away.
I get it. Oh, yeah, I get it. Shit. I get it.
So they feel it. In I guess another way,
yeah,
right.
What we were talking about with the girls,
Sam. Cuffing season starts early.
Apparently, who knew, man?
Sucks. Jeez, man.
I mean, I always tell the story. Like, you know, I was in like first grade when I first like, you know, tongued down a girl.
Whoa!
And then everybody I told to, they didn't believe me. And then the girl that she provoked me. It was kind of like. We were in the school bus and she just like grabbed my face and I was like, all right. and I just feel her tongue kind of like a little fish in my mouth. And then she lived in the building next door. So she starts telling everybody on the block and I'm telling my friends and they're not believing me. And I'm not really, it's not like I'm like, yo, I'm the man, son. I just kissed this chick. I was confused. I was just like, yo.
Yeah, first grade. That's what are you, six or seven?
Mad,
yeah,
young.
That's yo, young, man.
Six.
Yeah.
Mad young.
Yeah.
No, I'm not, by no means am I condoning it. I'm just saying, like, when we say, like, shit starts early, like, I remember it started pretty damn early for me.
No, I remember other kids getting down in sixth grade, because I remember that's when we had, like, our first,
that's like, sixth
dance.
Grade.
Sixth
that's,
grade. No, yeah. Sixth grade.
Man, he's talking first grade.
I'm talking first
Holy grade. Holy shit.
I'm talking 6 years old.
Oh, never mind. I'm talking about sixth grade is when things started going down.
Sixth grade? Nah.
Yeah. Damn, first grade, I don't know, man.
No, what the hell are we thinking?
I was just
about?
Worried about the G.I. Joe with the Kung Fu grip, man. What are you doing over there?
Yeah, so she broke me down, I guess, or into that world.
All right, you need to talk to somebody.
Maybe, I don't know, bro. I might have to call Sife and get his shrink. Jeez.
Talk to Paul.
Yeah.
I might get him angry.
Paul be like, yo, I was in preschool, yo.
Oh, my God. We definitely got to talk to him next week, bro.
Nah, it'll be funny.
Is fresh on his mind. Like, we got to get him.
Yeah, no, we do. We do. Hopefully he divulges, because I know it's something that hit him hard.
Yeah. So we have a guest today that I can see if he's available now. If you guys want to take that tour now?
Let's do it.
That's right. Cool. So with us today, we've got Juan Vidal. He's a new author of his first published book, Rap Dad. But you might have seen some of this stuff on NPR, Vibe Magazine, and a host of other publications out there in the world. So Juan, man, thank you for joining us on Fatherhoods.
And congratulations on the book, man.
Yeah.
Appreciate it, guys. Happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, writing a book is not an easy task, so I definitely commend you on that one.
Barely get a haiku out.
Oh, man, yeah, it's a grind.
So I mean, we kind of took a kind of a quick tour through the book, and you know, there's a lot of, you know, you have a lot there, right? And I know this is your first book, and you kind of go through the different phases of your life and how fatherhood has impacted you. Can you kind of get into a little bit? Because for us, you know, we talk about fatherhood from a bunch of different perspectives because we've got kids of varying ages and numbers of kids that differ. How do you, you know, as far as your own personal fatherhood story, you know, your own children, how's that dynamic currently for you?
Yeah, so I'm a father of four, actually. So it is, it's a grind. It's a lot of work. But it's a joy. Also, I've been married for, next year will be 15 years. Wow. So I got married pretty young. I'm actually 37. I got married, you know, early 20s and had our first when I was about 26, 27, something like that. So yeah, there's six of us, man. So we got a wild and loud house. My wife is actually out right now, so hopefully nobody runs down to the basement with a bloody nose. Because that's how it be sometimes.
Right. Hey, Juan, so from reading your book, you've got, it's three sons, one daughter?
Yeah. I have my oldest is 10, the second boy is 8, and then my daughter is 6, and then the youngest is 4. So they're all pretty much like 2 years apart.
And what's your big noticeable difference between raising boys versus girls?
Man, I could get in trouble for this one.
Don't worry, boys, we get in trouble all the time.
Right. I mean, boys is just like, you know, just shake it off. You know, you fall down, shake it off. You know, my daughter, it's for to some extent, it's the same thing because I try to not like. She is my princess and all that, you know what I mean? Like how fathers are with their daughters and stuff. But I try not to go too far down that lane, you know? And I try to really be tough with her the way I am with my boys in the sense of like, oh, shake it off. You're fine. You know what I mean? Mm. But girls are definitely more of a challenge in some ways because they are like, they're more emotional in certain ways. So some things is just like my wife has to handle that, you know, like, cause I don't understand what she might be going through, even though she's 6 and almost 7. There are certain things that happen that I'm just like, yeah, this might not be the best for me to handle. Like, she has to step in for that, you know? So it's definitely a different dynamic. But it's all good at the end of the day.
Before we brought you on, we were talking about the differences, if there's differences on how you would treat sons versus daughters in terms of like the future of them having relationships and first boyfriends, first girlfriends, whatever. Do you think there's a difference in the way you'd approach the boys versus the girl?
Man, I think so. I mean, I actually had this conversation with my sons the other day because, you know, they're 8 and 10, which is young. But I think about when I was 10, like fifth grade, and like, I already had girls that I was like, you know, scoping out, you know, to an extent to like,
well, Manny was making out at first grade.
There you go. Right. See, that's terrifying as a father. Yeah. Cause I mean, I, you know, to keep it 100, like I knew kids that lost their virginity in like fourth grade and third grade.
Right.
And that's insane to me. So, and it's scary. And that was back then, that's like late 80s, you know? So think about how crazy it is now.
Social
media and all that stuff, like what they're exposed to is more racy at an even younger age. So but to get to the question, I mean, I was just having a conversation with my boys the other day about just how you treat girls and women and that you always treat them with respect and stuff, because I can't remember what we were watching, but it wasn't anything like too crazy, but someone said something rude to a female in the show, and they started asking questions and stuff, so it kind of opened up, you know, a lot of good conversation, kind of like in that realm. But I haven't had to deal with any like boyfriend, girlfriend stuff as of yet. I know they do talk about like girls that they have crushes on and they have like three girlfriends. You know, my 10-year-old talks about that he has three girlfriends and he just means crushes, you know, so, haven't had to deal with too much of that stuff yet. I think it's, kind of dealing with some of that stuff as it comes along, to an extent.
Are you fearful or like, well, yeah, fearful of when that day comes for your boys versus your girls? Like, is there a difference in your mind?
Yeah, like typically us guys are worried about our daughters, you know, and their boyfriends and, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, man, you know, I think I'm learning as I go. And I think there is a level of fear there. But I think a lot of it has to do with like how we're preparing them, from a young age. Like, I'll be honest, like I had to have like, which, you know, quote unquote, the sex talk with my boys a lot younger than I thought I was going to have to, because they were coming home asking questions. And this was a few years ago. They were like 6 and 8 at the time, I think it was. And I was not expecting that I was going to have that kind of a conversation so early, but they were just making all these like comments and asking questions. I was like, well, obviously kids in school are talking about these things. So I brought it up to a friend of mine who has boys that are now like teenagers. And he was like, yo, I had a conversation with my kids when they're like 5 and 6. And I was like, nah, that's crazy. Like, that's insane. I was like, no. And I like refused to believe it. But he's like, either you do it or somebody else is going to do it. So like, I really learned a lot from that. And it just made me realize that our kids know a lot more than we think they know.
Yeah, that's true.
And if we don't like nip that stuff in the bud early, like somebody else is going to do that work. And like, I don't want that to happen. You know, they're going to hear things on their own, and it's up to me and my wife to like address that kind of stuff and make sure that we're giving them the information that they need so that they can make smart decisions, you know?
That actually reminds me of something. So my 11-year-old daughter, she comes home from school with like all these what she believes to be facts about random shit, not like sex, but
yeah,
it could be, you know, history, for instance. And she'll kick whatever it is that they spoke about in school, like, again, her friends. And then I'll be like, yo, that's nothing like what really happened. And let me explain to you how it really went down. And yeah, yeah.
And she doesn't believe you, right?
Right, right. Yeah. No, you know what's crazy? Well, I mean, I was like that too, I guess, when I was a kid. But like, now we got, you know, technology at our fingertips. So now I go Google some shit and be like, yo, but check it. Don't listen to me. Look at where it's at. But trust that I know what I'm talking about. So in the same vein, you talk about educating your kids at an early, you know, whenever that curiosity kind of presents itself, it is your best bet, as uncomfortable as it is. Because my wife has had to have conversations about, you know, reproduction, for instance, with two of the three kids, because my youngest is 2 years old already. And it, you know, you kick it to them in like pseudo layman's terms so they're not super confused, but you kind of have to lay that foundation when curiosity strikes. And that's all I have to say about that.
but listen, I think the question that I'm trying to figure out is how you, if we approach boys versus our daughters completely different. You know, I only have a daughter, so I'm asking, you know, whoever has both, or you know, or how Kay is thinking about handling it with his son. Because, you know, typically us men are more brutes than women. I feel like the mother's probably going to have a more balanced approach for either or, where us guys are going to just be like, you know, like I said, we know what we were in our teenage lives, what we did, you know, how we thought of women and, you know, what might have done. So we're fearful of that. And it reflects on how we'll probably try to protect our daughter, or, you know, and stuff like that. But maybe with the boys, we'll be like, ah, yeah, go ahead, you know, go do your thing. You know, we won't be as protective. Now, is that right? Is that wrong? That's what I'm trying to figure out. Like, how do you approach that?
I mean, I think Juan hit it on the head. And Juan, don't let me speak for you. Like, the preparation that you talked about a little while ago with respect to, like, you know, respecting women and that dialogue that you have with your kids, I'm assuming that's kind of you laying the foundation as to how they should think about, you know, handling, you know, relationships and females in general.
Yeah, that's exactly it, man. It's laying down that foundation, because the questions are going to come, and like, you just got to be prepared for it. And like, this is like really a timely conversation, to be honest, because just yesterday, my oldest came home with like this thing from school where they're going to be having like a sex education talk at his school in January. And like, you have to like sign the form and say like, if you want your kids to participate in it or whatever. And he's like, he really is like, really wants to participate in it. He's telling me that he has a lot of questions. And I'm like, yo, you don't have to wait for like some thing, formal thing at your school. Like, we're always here to like talk about that stuff and answer those questions. But it just goes to show that like, there's like a hunger for like that information. So yeah, like a lot of it is really just education. Like, and yeah, I mean, I had to get so deep as to telling them what sex was, like literally like the act of it when he was like 8 or 7. He's like, you did that with mom?
Oh, man.
Like, it was like, it was that real, because the stuff that he was asking, I was like, I can't hold anything back. I mean, you have to have definitely some boundaries and you don't get too crazy with it. But like the basic information just has to be presented to them in a way that they can understand, so they can use that information, you know?
Hey, Juan, did your dad have that talk with you, and kind of going into your book a little bit and this kind of a two-pronged question. So that, and also, you know, mentioning the way you're treating, you know, teaching your sons about respect for women. You know, in your book, you mentioned that your dad was quite a womanizer and, you know, that type of thing. That have a strong influence on how you're teaching your sons about relationships and women?
Yeah, from my own dad, I learned everything not to do. So it was just that, this is the complete reverse. I mean, yeah, like I grew up in a household. It was, you know, my father, my uncles, and it was just like this, the Latin machismo, where it was just like men, you know, in a sense, like conquering women, you know what I mean? And it was like, I saw that stuff from a very young age. I mean, I remember my dad even brought me like on a date one time with a girl, because it was just me and him, and he, you know, it wasn't supposed to be a situation where I knew he was on a date, but like years later, I realized exactly what the setting was. And it was like, he brought me to like a bar during the day with like some blonde woman. And I'm just like, I remember that stuff, you know? So like, as I grew up, I had to make like a real conscious effort to not be that type of a person. Even though, you know, going through a certain period of my life, I wanted to be, right? I had friends that had all the girls, and they had, you know, all that kind of stuff that you want when you're like in middle school and high school, like that braggadocious mentality. But like, that was never really me necessarily. And not to judge anyone who kind of went through that type of stuff or was that character at a point in their life. I think we all have to go through our own experiences, but I felt like I had to kind of make a conscious decision early on to kind of not be certain things. And not to say that I was like this all-knowing wise being, but I mean, there was some stuff that I just would not allow myself to do. Even stuff like drugs, like I would never go further than smoking weed, because I saw what hard drugs did to a family and how it broke down the family structure. So like, there was just certain conscious decisions that I made early on that I was not going to cross certain lines. You know what I mean? So yeah, I learned everything not to do.
Right.
I always wonder, because, you know, to me it's like a coin flip in you know, how I look at things. You grow up, you know, you hear this a lot in hip hop, right? Or I guess not in hip hop particularly, but in urban settings, the cycle repeats itself, right? And right, whatever that situation might be for those people. And so in this particular case, and you know, all four of us here have had some sort of like missing father figure to some degree. And so, you know, for me, and the outcome has been pretty positive, you know, among us here, but it's like a coin flip to me. Like it could easily be a copy paste of whatever you went through magnified in your own, you know, existence. So like you mentioned, you made a conscious effort to go the other way. Was there ever any conflict in your world where you might have easily fallen into the same cycle that your father kind of perpetuated?
Oh man, absolutely. Like, and I talk about some of this in the book and stuff, but like I was in a music group, and I was, you know, full-time touring, and this was before I was writing full-time and stuff, but my group that I was in at the time, like we got signed to Universal. We were like traveling, touring, and it was just in our group, it was me, my best friend, and his wife. So it was like, we were like Latin Fugees as far as like the makeup of the group or whatever. But that to be honest, like having a female in the group, especially the wife of one of the members, worked a lot in our favor, especially in this particular area. Had it been just me and my boy on the road, married, you know what I mean? Right. On the road, just
to no good at that
going
point.
From city to city, like it could have very easily played out different, because at the end of the day, we're all men and temptation is what it is. And, it would have not been too far fetched to say that I could have ended up in a similar situation. But yeah, man, I thank God every day that there was a female in our group, because she was there to really like intercept when like somebody was looking at us in a certain type of way. You know, like a man on a platform or a woman on a platform is something to be desired in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
It's attractive and there's an energy to it. You're rocking a concert or whatever it is. Like people are drawn to like that magnetism almost, you know? So like there could have been a lot of situations where things would have played out differently. So, yeah, like there were a lot of situations where, I definitely could have fallen into that, but I tried my best to kind of like turn a blind eye to some of that stuff. If I saw someone looking at me like interested, in any way, which not to say that was often or anything, but like, you know, a couple times, you know, I know that something could have happened. But I was married and I had like, you know, one or two kids at the time. And yeah, you have to like flee from those situations and like not put yourself in that environment. Yeah.
So the moral of the story here is all these dude crews, get yourself some females in there and it'll help things out.
Right. Yes.
I think we all probably would have escaped a lot of headaches if we
had some females absolutely. In the crew. Like that's a good balance.
Yeah, man.
What was the name of the group that you were part of?
I'll tell you guys off the podcast.
Oh, okay. Okay. Oh, shit. Oh, okay.
Witness protection or something?
Keeping it low key.
No. I knew that y'all were going to ask that. And okay. I don't mention it in the book also because, like, and it's not like for any reason other than just like separating the two worlds in a sense. You know, like there's some people that don't mind like kind of living kind of in the middle of those two things. But because I don't like necessarily do that anymore, like, it's like you want to be, I guess,
it's a closed chapter.
It's like taking, huh?
It's a closed chapter, right?
Yeah, it is. It's kind of a closed chapter. And it's like there's people that have been like rappers that have like put out books. And it's like sometimes they're not necessarily taken seriously as writers or as authors in a lot of ways. And that's not to say that's the case for everybody. But I've seen that happen. And I would never want that to be a thing necessarily. It might sound weird. It's just like a little quirk, I guess.
No, I get it.
Yeah, no. I've seen
Stranger Things, so I'm not. That doesn't faze us. I don't respect that.
Going back quickly to the coin flip of you know, either repeating the cycle or breaking the cycle. A question similar to that is: so if you've got a dad in your life who's, you know, whatever, they're not doing the right thing, or they're not so great at being a dad. You know, what's better, having them in your life and they're kind of, you know, someone you're wishing maybe wasn't in your life, or not having a dad present at all? What do you guys think is the, that's a tough one.
That is tough, man.
I don't know. Why don't we let our guest start and then we can go around the room.
Wow. Yeah, that's tough because on one hand, there's a void, and that void could make you go down a certain path because you're trying to fill that void with other things to kind of just kind of like fill that empty space. And then on the other side, you're just seeing everything that's wrong about a certain person. So like, I don't know that there's necessarily a right or wrong answer. I think it's just like, it's whatever situation you find yourself in. Yeah. Like you kind of, you figure out a way to navigate that path and make the best of it. Like, my mom got me remarried and my stepdad, is somebody I knew, since I was like 4 years old, but my stepdad's son, he grew up without a mom 'cause his mom passed away. So like we both grew up in some sense without one of the parents there. So I really just think it just depends on kind of the very specific, you know, the specific situation. I don't know if that there's a right or wrong.
To me, agreed.
And I don't think it's, I mean, this, I think this is a saying and it might be super cliche, but they say like, it's better to know the evil you know versus the evil you don't know? Or I could be, yeah. Evil could be the wrong term, but basically it's saying like the known bad is likely better than the bad you never knew.
Right. It's, well, like Juan, in your case, you know, you seeing the things that you didn't like that your dad was doing taught you, you know, the right, or at least the path for you that you wanted to take. So you saw the stuff you didn't want to do and made you, you know, taught you what you wanted to do in a sense. So that was beneficial.
I think that, exactly. I think things can be taught in, you know, in the absence of a person as well, yeah, as when they're, because my father was like, he was like a ghost in the sense that he would kind of like appear one moment and then kind of be gone the next. So it's like he was there, but he wasn't there. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's hard to even put him in one category. Is he a father that was around just, you know, ruining everything? Or was he just someone that was just not there at all? Or very, in a very sparse way and ruining everything, you know? So he kind of like fit in that middle of like, he's like this apparition that just like pops up, you know, in and out.
And every situation, like we said, is different. Like some situations where there's larger families, they might step in these places, you know, where there's that absence and that void. And, you know, and then also the individual child might, you know, it might affect them in different ways. One might, like in this situation where you see the things you don't want to become, you know, and some might absorb that and become that, you know, like you just never know. It's just
it's a
different situation. Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah.
Going back into your on a higher note, let's talk a little bit about fatherhood and hip hop. So, I mean, in your book, you know, you really tout those two as, you know, pinnacles for, I guess, you know, a successful life in your case, correct?
Yeah, I would say that the two definitely like converged in my life in a lot of ways. I mean, Because I had a father that was not around or hardly around, it's like I look to these other kind of, I guess you can call them even authority figures, even if they weren't necessarily that. It was like these peripheral father figures that I like gleaned lessons from. They were more like older brothers, if we're being honest, because at this, you know, when I'm in, you know, early 90s listening to Nas, he's only like, you know, not very many years older than me. But it's like you're gleaning these lessons from these people that are on this pedestal. So I looked to them in a sense for like direction and, but at the end of the day, I saw like a lot of the braggadocious stuff in hip hop, especially from like a lot of these younger cats, was like, it was all like fear. It was like masking their own like past and like insecurities and stuff. Because a lot of my heroes, if you want to call them that, really came from similar homes as mine in the sense that they grew up without a parent in the house, mm-hmm. You know? So because I took a lot from hip hop, like the older I got, just the more I saw kind of how these two paths and these two things like just converged a lot in my life. Because, and now, like, I mean, we're part of a generation now, just talking about like the rap dad and just the whole idea of a rap dad. Like we're part of a generation now that's of parents that are about as old as hip hop itself, right? Like, mm-hmm. You know, late 30s, 40s, you know what I mean? Which is about how old hip hop is. It's like, so we're this generation that's now raising kids at a time when hip hop is the most dominant art form and most dominant, you know, youth movement in the world, not just our country, but yeah, like absolutely. The entire world,
yeah,
you know? Yeah. And I know everybody in this chat, I'm sure, has been overseas and been to a lot of places, and just like the influence that hip hop has, the way that it informs the world at large, like it's second to none, you know? And it's like the people that practice hip hop, you know, at least like the old school heads, or if you want to call them that, that are, you know, like Jay-Z and Nas and these people, like now they're parents, you know? So it's like, it's inspiring to see the way that they raise their own kids and stuff. And especially with social media and stuff, it's like, you can't find any interview with like someone like Chance the Rapper, who's a, you know, a younger father, where he doesn't talk about fatherhood. It's like this badge of honor now that people are kind of caring and waving and stuff like that. So it's really, really dope to see, because it's such an influential art form. The more that people talk about fatherhood, the more like it opens up these kinds of conversations.
So you mentioned this in your book about RZA, the conversation that you had with him, especially about fatherhood. But I was curious as to, you know, what a little bit more in the meat of that conversation and what it was that really kind of inspired you and put a positive battery in your back after that combo.
Yeah, I mean, so I went down there to do a story that I got invited to go to the space called the Chess House at the World Chess Hall of Fame. RZA was going to be there doing just speaking in schools and like doing school assemblies and going to prisons and stuff. And that's kind of what I was there for. So I did that story and did everything I needed to do for that. But like while we had kind of time, I guess downtime, like I wanted to talk to him about fatherhood and stuff because I had listened to, I think, an interview with him and like Tavis Smiley, and he was talking about fatherhood, and he has a son named Understanding. Wow. Like literally his son's name is Understanding, and I thought that was like that was like the craziest thing to me. And so like I brought that up and that I listened to that interview and just started to just talk to him just kind of casually about stuff, and he was real attentive, and he was just like a dope person. Like he's somebody I could just listen to, you know, for like a long time. Just the way that he speaks is just like he sounds just like the way that he raps, you know. And I just remember just sitting on like a stoop or whatever, just like kind of picking his brain. And it was just cool to see the way that he showed interest, just asking about like what my sons did, what my daughter did, like what they like to do. And it wasn't like an incredibly deep conversation, but I think that what affected me the most was that this is like a hero of mine since I was a kid, and him showing interest in a stranger and in the way that this stranger is raising his kids, I think it just meant a lot. You know what I mean? Like he could have just easily just made gave him, like, yeah.
Made him human, right?
Exactly.
And, like, and it could have gone in a whole other direction that would have been horrible.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he could have just given like these surface answers, but like he was real, like I said, attentive and asking questions himself. And I just thought that was real dope. So it wasn't to like make much of a simple conversation, but I think kind of what it did kind of below the surface, I think, was what meant more to me than the actual content of that conversation, because it was a real simple conversation, you know. Right. Yeah.
So in light of, you know, this whole thing that happened with Drake where he was allegedly hiding his kid and all that stuff that came about, you know, you earlier you mentioned like parenting and specifically fatherhood being kind of a badge of honor for a lot of these folks in the industry now. You see little instances where it's not that, right? Where it might be even considered shameful to some of these folks or a sign of weakness, it seems like. So what's your take? Because even more recently, and Kay, you shared this with us earlier, YBN Almighty Jay recently basically came out and showed it the world. You know, I think it might have been yesterday, today.
Yeah.
He got a kid, right? And he's, what, 19 years of age now?
Yeah. What was interesting about it was that, you know, I mean, he did this long video about it on the way to see his son. And, well, it was interesting because he's a young guy, right? He's 19 and he's talking that, you know, he was kind of scared about the whole situation and he was trying to keep it under wraps because he didn't really know like how people were going to take to it. And that seems kind of foreign to me. But then I guess to like a 19-year-old kid, that's a real thing. Right. And then to all of a sudden turn around and make a, you know, in his head think, all right, no, this is a positive thing and I'm going to be proud of this. And, that's cool, right? That's something that's cool. But then the flip side is just the whole social media side of it and making, because you're a public figure and now you're making a public proclamation and, you know, showing people that you're a parent. It's like, you know, I guess some people don't care, but then this whole generation of, you know, everyone kind of just wanting to know everything about you does care. So that's a whole, to me, that's
what
a whole
is or different... isn't exploitation too of your family,
right? Yeah, but that's just the world we live in now, you know.
It is. Like, I have are you guys familiar with Lecrae?
Oh, yeah.
He's a friend of mine, and he doesn't post pictures of his kids on social media at all, and that's because the internet is mean, like, you know. Yeah. And it's like, you don't, some people just don't want to expose their kids, you know, to certain things, and I can completely understand that. Like, I can't necessarily creep into the mind of a 19-year-old that has a kid all of a sudden, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's something that I don't understand, especially with a lot of fame. Like, I think that it's easy for a lot of people to kind of sit back and, like, judge, like, really, really, really famous people. Mm-hmm. But you have no idea how you would cope with that level of fame. Like, just kind of a sidebar, but, like, I see people, like, criticize, like, someone like Justin Bieber a lot for, like, messing up and doing wild things and stuff like that. But right. Yo, that kid became famous.
Yeah, it's
when
all
he was fire, so okay. young. Like, had I been famous when I was like 14, 15, yo, I would have gone absolutely crazy. Like,
yeah.
So, like, when people like pretend to understand that level of fame or what you would do if that kind of temptation like presents itself in your life, yo, like, that's just wild to me. So, like, I mean, the Drake thing, like, that you brought up, I mean, he says in the line, you know, in the album, like, I wasn't hiding right. whatever, I was hiding the world from my kid. And I don't know what the motivation was necessarily, but like, I do understand that line, because it kind of goes back to what I said about my friend Lecrae. It's like hiding the world from your kid because you want to protect them in certain ways. Mm-hmm. Especially again, with that level of notoriety and with that much attention on you constantly, and like everything that you do, people are scrutinizing it. And it's like, if anybody says something about my kids online, like,
yeah,
it's over. Like,
yeah.
I'm going to jail, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, why put yourself in that situation?
Well, it's funny you said about the success. Yeah. I mean, because Jay, in this video, he does, you know, he's talking about it. It's almost like he's talking to himself about just kind of figuring out what, you know, what he's thinking. And he mentioned, you know, he mentions that his level of success has come so quickly, and then he's got a kid so quickly on top of that. So that's got to be a lot for a 19-year-old.
It's a lot of
man.
Pressure, yeah, for sure.
That is, man. I mean, even I became a dad when I was 26 maybe. I don't know. What, something like that. 19, like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I
especially
guess
the, like when you're taking off and you're just like blowing up, you're just getting started. Like that's something to really like grapple with. I think Chuck D had his first kid when Public Enemy was like just really getting big, maybe around their first album too. Like that's a lot to deal with when, especially for people that have like a lot of professional ambition. And that's some of the stuff I talk about in the book as well, is like balancing, you know, personal responsibility with like professional ambition. And it's like, as a creative, it's a burden to get your work done. You know, there's like a lot of depression and there's suffering involved, and you need to like write this or paint this or record this and make this because it's something inside you that's begging to get out. Whatever the motivation is, maybe it's to get the respect of your peers, or maybe it's just because of this hunger inside you to create. Now you balance that with being there for a family and having to provide and being a consistent presence. Like you mix those things together and it's really, really, really difficult.
It's tough. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And finding the inspiration to be a creative, especially if that part of you is what is bringing in the revenue, and then finding that balance. And it, like Kay said, you feel guilty because it's like you need to be inspired to create.
Yeah.
But to be inspired, sometimes it takes you to be detached from your family to a degree.
Yeah, man.
And it's like terrible. It's like you know, if any normal human being is going to feel terrible about that. But it's like, how do you know, you have to do certain things.
Right. Yeah, you're being selfish in a sense, because you have to go inside to get creative and create. Right.
So we have to be honest with ourselves. This world, this entertainment industry in general is a selfish business. You know what I'm saying? Like,
oh, yeah.
Like in order to present yourself out there, you have to have an ego of some sort, whether, you know, big or small. It depends, you know. Obviously the big ones is where you don't want to go, but in order to say to yourself, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to put myself in front of a bunch of people confidently, you have to feed your ego to believe that you can do that. Mm-hmm. And you know, and all of that is counterintuitive to raising a family, and you know, like to me it's like counter that part of your life. So it's like such a crazy balance. It's almost like a Jekyll and Hyde thing at a point.
It really is, yo. You really like, it's, you put your, you put not a mask in the sense of a facade, but a mask in the sense like, I'm putting my business hat on and this is my family hat. You know, you become a completely different person. Like hip hop is, it's a blood sport. It's like, you know, people literally have died like for this stuff, you know, and it's all you know, predicated on like what this was built on, the way that it started. And it was a voice for people that didn't have a voice, and it was competitive, and it very much will always be that. So like, it's not always conducive to like packing a lunch for your kid and dropping them off at school and changing diapers. Like those things are in a lot of ways are like polar opposites, you know? But I think that they're merging more and more. Again, to back to what I was saying before about like people like Chance the Rapper that are and DJ Khaled and different people that are super vocal about themselves as parents, not just fathers but mothers as well. Right. So it's like these things are like starting to kind of blend in more and more, where like the older rappers get, for example, like the more they're talking about like family stuff, you know. Right. Not every rapper, because they're, you know, like Pusha T is not gonna, you know, talk about like.
Well, Pusha T did talk about. He did mention something about, like, yeah. if you're not taking care of your kids, and don't even fuck with like.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, like there'll be that stuff, but it's like he's not gonna change his entire persona.
Right. Right.
So like, these things will like blend like more and more, as like the people in rap like become parents and get older, because like you're not gonna talk about certain things forever.
I mean, at the end of the day, hip-hop is growing up, and it's inevitable. It's happening. We're all living it. And we have to take it in a place, and I say we as the generation that we're from, living it and working in it, our job is to make sure that we help hip-hop mature gracefully.
Well, I think to your point, like, I think it's pretty cool that we can see, you know, a young rapper from the young generation, you know, Jay, who's 19.
Right.
You know, he's making a splash online by being proud of, you know, being a dad. So I think that's I think that's a sign, a positive sign in the right direction.
Which, mind you, it's different from before, because people used to be proud of being dads, but in the negative sense, like, oh, I got like 10 kids, you know. Right. 10 right. baby mamas, you know. that's what we needed to be changed, you know what I'm saying? And that's what I think is the positive side of that.
It's Mari Povich ruined everything.
So Juan, this is your first book. Are you already thinking about the next one, or like where's your head at as far as continuing down the path of being an author?
I want to do different things. I plan to have a screenplay done by the end of the year, nice. And kind of started the second book. Kind of still trying to figure out what the second book is going to be. But yeah, man, I mean, I imagine you guys are, you know, from what I know about you guys, like, it's always on to the next thing, and it's like always, what am I going to make next? What am I going to build next? And you know, and I found out. And I realized about myself, because I've been a writer for a while now, but it was always just, you know, 1,000 words here, 2,000 words, you know, it's shorter things. Like an 80,000-word book is a completely different thing, but it's a marathon that I enjoyed having like a larger goal that I'm running towards. And I feel like it's like that first tattoo, like you want to get more now, you know, it's
right.
It's kind of similar to that. It's like, now what other big project am I going to tackle? So yeah, like I'm still trying to figure out exactly where I'm gonna land next, but it's gonna be in a lot of different areas. So yeah, man.
Dope. And so Rap Dad is the name of the book. It's available pretty much anywhere dope books are sold, I'll say.
Yeah.
Where can people reach you if they want to find out more, or just, you know, what do you want to plug here as we wrap things up?
Yeah, man, just get the book, Rap Dad, A Story of Family and the Subculture That Shaped a Generation. But yeah, I'm on Twitter and Instagram. It's Juan Love, ITS Juan Love.
Dope.
Yeah.
well, Juan, man, you know, thank you. And we really appreciate the conversation. Yo, keep doing your thing, man. And we hope to run into you at some point in the future.
Yeah. Congrats. Yeah,
man. Appreciate you guys. Thank you, man. Really enjoyed it. Appreciate y'all.
All right, man. Peace.
Peace.
Peace.